When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's the top of the week, and it turns out it was prescient for us to call this weekly segment Strange News. Because increasingly, and I don't want to date myself here, increasingly, all of the news sounds a little bit strange, doesn't it? We are going to see some echoes of things we discussed in our episodes over the years. In this week's segment, we are going to learn about cheating in the non-romantic sense, by the way. We're going to learn about proven evidence of a thing we suspected for quite some time and that I've stated over the years as though it were a matter of fact. And then we are going to give you a bit of what's called an earworm, potentially. An earworm is when songs get stuck in your head. You can check out a Brain Stuff episode on YouTube that explains the science of what are called earworms. That may also get some songs stuck in your head. And if you have ever had an earworm, if you've ever had a song stuck in your head, then it's possible that at some point it became like an invasive thought. It may have even felt like torture. Do you like that dramatic pause, guys? I wanted to keep it subtle, but I want people to hear the italics and the ellipses.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Oh, wow. And here comes the rest of the story. Okay, so we're coming to you from the Oklahoman, it's a publication out of Oklahoma. I'm not going to say what the title of this article is yet, because that just kind of gives it all away. We're going to bury the lead a little bit. So here's the story. There is a man named John Basco. He was an inmate of the Oklahoma County Detention Center, and he passed away. He died at that jail on Sunday, September 11th. This past Sunday, as we're recording this, a week ago, as you're hearing it. According to a media release that the jail officials put out, he was found unresponsive in his cell just a little bit before 4 a.m. in the morning, around 3:50 a.m., and officers there who found him attempted to resuscitate him, and then emergency responders arrived. They attempted to revive him as well. They were unsuccessful, and he was pronounced dead at 4:06 a.m. Now, according to the release, there's no foul play suspected here. They are looking into whether or not it was a drug overdose of some kind. So the story isn't about someone getting killed in jail, necessarily, at least on the surface. But it is, here's one of the wrinkles. He was booked into the jail on a drug trafficking complaint, let's call it, or a, you know, a charge, on Thursday. So he only lasted from Thursday until Sunday at the jail. That is, you know, usually not good, especially if foul play is involved, right? That means maybe somebody took him out. But in this case, maybe he got some kind of illicit substance while in the jail and passed away due to that, if it was in fact a drug overdose. There's a lot to look at there. Now, guys, that story is already like, it's a little sus, but not, you know, there's nothing really to talk about here. A man died while in custody. But there's more. See, this wasn't the first time John had been in that specific detention center. Back in 2019, he was serving some time when he alleges he and several other inmates were subject to a type of torture that you were alluding to, Ben, a type of psychological torture, or at least harassment. I don't know. It's kind of weird how you classify it with language in English, right? It could be torture. It is torture, and this type of thing is torture in many contexts. I would argue that in this context it is torture, but I'm not a lawyer. He alleged, as well as other inmates, that several officers at that jail placed them in a room that is generally reserved for speaking with an attorney, right? You've seen those on television before. Maybe you've seen the inside of one where an attorney and an inmate can meet in private. They said that once in there, they were handcuffed with their arms behind their backs, and they were made to stand up for hours at a time, up to 2 hours at a time while in these rooms, often with multiple inmates in there at a time. And then a song was played very, very loudly inside that room while they were in that, you know, it could be considered a stress position, right? If you're made to stand up. Oh, they were handcuffed to the wall, by the way. So right. It was like hands tied and against the wall. The officers, two of them, played the song Baby Shark extremely loudly for up to 2 hours on a loop while they were in that
room. Kill me.
There are some people listening now who are drowning out Baby Shark on their television or their smart home device. Also, don't have a smart
probably
home
a,
device.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say it's probably a tablet. It's just how it goes. So, all right, guys, well, let's talk about this. First of all, do you personally consider that torture?
Hearing one song for an extended amount of time.
At a very high volume.
At a very high volume for, it really depends on the time interval, doesn't it? What is an extended amount of time here? Not to answer a question with a question, but are we talking 1 hour? Are we talking 36 hours? When you get...
we're talking 1 to 2 hours at a time.
1 to 2 hours at a time, and it's a relatively short song that is pretty repetitive. With that time interval, you could consider that psychological torture. It would not be to the same level as, say, earlier incidents involving the Barney theme song, right? For anybody not in the U.S., that's the Big Purple Dinosaur. That's been used in the past. I think it's definitely a move, but it's
It
goes that far. I mean, such a short song for 2 hours will give you a non-consensual version of semantic satiation. So you could call it torture.
Yeah, and we've certainly heard of occasions where
you know, prisoners of war, I suppose, or, you know, detainees have been kept up for days on end with really heavy, loud, like metal music playing on a loop at incredibly high volumes. That's more like a sleep deprivation tool. This really is more along the lines of psychological warfare. And I would definitely still consider this a war crime.
Mm. Okay, so the officers in question, according to their own statements, the ones who were administering this, they called it discipline. They thought of it and used it as a disciplinary tactic. Seriously. They, according to their own statements.
Just don't believe them.
Yeah. Right. According to their own statements, they said they didn't agree with the way discipline was handed out, what types and how it was handed out there at the facility. And, you know, they're basically employees saying, you know, they're not doing this right. We're going to show you the right way to do this and really show these inmates when they do something wrong. And also, guys, according to the district attorney there in Oklahoma, it wasn't torture, but it was, quote, inhumane discipline. Okay, so it was inhumane. And he charged both of these officers, as well as the lieutenant who was in charge of these officers, who apparently found out about it and didn't do anything about it. He charged them all with misdemeanors. They were misdemeanor counts of cruelty to a prisoner and conspiracy.
Copy. Question, Matt. So this is not everybody on either side of this case is clear that this was not interrogative, right? This was not enhanced interrogation. They weren't trying to learn something from the people subjected to this. They were trying to punish them for a thing that they had done.
Correct.
Okay.
And this particular detention center has had a real problem with, I guess you could call it, discipline in the past. Because the man who died, John Basco, he was 48 when he died, by the way. He was the 14th person to die while at that detention center this year. Now, that 14 doesn't sound like that high of a number, but for that many inmates to die while at the facility, and it's not like they were an old, you know, someone who had been in there for 25 plus years and they got their charges when they were in their 50s or 60s. We're talking young, relatively younger inmates who passed away. And the majority of them, guys, passed away, at least according to, you know, the information we're getting from the facility itself, they passed away from drug overdoses. So drugs are getting into this facility like crazy. There's an article from Channel 4 KFOR from Oklahoma. They've got an article titled 14 Oklahoma County Detention Center Inmates Have Died This Year. Toxicology report claims one quarter of them are due to fentanyl overdoses.
Jeez.
Yeah. And it's not just fentanyl. It's also methamphetamine and several other drugs that are getting smuggled in at extremely high rates. So you can maybe imagine why those officers felt like there's something wrong, but then they took it in their own hands and did some horrible things. I don't know. I'm trying to just see all sides. Like, what is happening here at this facility? Because we can only see from the outside, right? The big question is, I think, in everybody's mind, did John's death, the one we talked about at the very top, the man who died in his cell on Sunday, this past Sunday, September 11, did it have anything to do with that 2019 instance of inhumane discipline? We don't know. At least nobody's saying. Perhaps one of the major contributing factors here in that would be if the officers who had administered that were then at the jail when John returned in 2022. And the answer is no. Both of those officers were fired.
Interesting. You're right, Matt. You're absolutely right. We are outsiders working with publicly available information. A person has died, which is a tragedy. There is a strong possibility here of a iceberg situation, right? If we know the place is riddled with corruption, which happens often, we've got a lot of former prison guards and former guests in the audience today. If it's riddled with corruption, which makes sense because prison guards are often underpaid, right, and incentivized to seek other income streams, then we can imagine quite reasonably that there was something else there. So maybe this is sort of a break in a larger case. And I'm speculating. I do not know for certain, but it sounds like there is stuff they don't want you to know regarding this jail system in particular. And so I'm wondering then if the victim in question, Basco, has been known to struggle with addiction. I'm wondering what else this person may have seen, right? The idea of the psychological torture with music, it's super messed up. It is a real thing. Uncle Sam has used it repeatedly in the past. That's public knowledge. But it sounds like that might have been a convenient hook to get the story into the public. And I'm thinking, just guessing here, that there may likely have been something else, perhaps some knowledge of other corruption that could have led to a convenient death, knowing, as predators always do, that a disadvantaged person is less likely to see justice done.
I agree. I left out the title of this initial article on purpose because there are a couple words in it that may change the way you're thinking about this whole case right now, guys, and everyone listening. I'm going to read that title now. Plaintiff in baby shark torture case dies Sunday at Oklahoma County Jail. And the reason why plaintiff is important, it's because this plaintiff who died there, John Basco, sued the jail. He was a plaintiff in a lawsuit that sued them, and that's what got those guys eventually in trouble and slapped with, unfortunately, only misdemeanor charges, the ones who were, inflicting that discipline. But it also affected the lieutenant as well. Just knowing that someone is part of a lawsuit in any way, it kind of raises suspicion if anything bad happens to them, right?
100%.
Or at least any and all available evidence should be found and preserved ASAP when something like that happens.
Absolutely. And one other thing to add to the fire here, Matt, I know you've been looking at this case. I've been looking at it as well. There was another federal lawsuit that was stayed until the conclusion of the criminal case. So there's a federal level lawsuit that was stopped in July. And the next hearing for that was scheduled for September 22nd. This person will not be there. I don't like it.
It doesn't smell good.
I don't like it.
All right. Well, for now, until new information comes to light, we're just going to kind of keep it on the back shelf and wait for something to come in. If you know anything, please contact us. We'll let you know how to do that at the end of this episode. For now, we're going to listen to a few words from our sponsors, but we'll be right back with more strange news.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
She's breathing right now?
Yes, she's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with some more increasingly strange news. This one comes to us from the world of chess, which I think before, like, the Queen's Gambit came out, hadn't really been making too many waves, pop culturally speaking. I mean, I guess there was, like, Searching for Bobby Fischer. That was the last big kind of like high stakes chess film that I really remember from when I was a kid. But, you know, sometimes it's looked at as something of a niche kind of world. And it's not really something that you tend to ascribe too much controversy to until now. Again, that's not entirely true. There was the instance of a chess robot snapping a young player's finger because he made his move too quickly. That was the last chess-related strange news story I seem to recall. But this one, it basically has got the whole chess world reeling. So if you're familiar with chess, I mean, there aren't a whole lot of household names in chess. But if there were one, it would be a guy named Magnus Carlsen, who is a 31-year-old Norwegian chess grandmaster. He is a powerhouse player, has been since his early 20s, dominated the field of play in chess, in the professional chess competitive tour, I guess. It's sort of like a circuit kind of thing with different competitions that sort of lead to larger ones, sort of like, you know, golf or any other professional sport. You have these certain tournaments that get established as like the important ones that lead to, you know, the highest stakes ones. And the one we're talking about today is something called the Sink Field Cup in St. Louis. This is a very, you know, high level tournament where all of the best players come out to compete. There is a $350,000 reward or purse, I guess you could say, for winning. And Magnus Carlsen, you know, riding high on like a 56, I think, match streak, is obviously favored to win. He's kind of the just the top dog. There's really no one that can quite compete with him. 53, rather. And this is there's a couple of different interesting distinctions here. Classical matches, which is a certain style of play, I guess, with a certain set of rules. Then there are also non-classical matches. So he went 53 matches without a loss in classical play. But he did, you know, he has lost a few times in non-classical play. And I'm not quite sure what the distinction is. Maybe one of you guys are familiar. But there was an upset gentlemen, a massive upset. A young up-and-comer from America, a dude by the name of Hans Niemann, he defeated Magnus Carlsen in classical play. You know, and every dog has his day. You know, it's not completely alarming in and of itself for a champion to be, you know, dethroned. But almost immediately, allegations of cheating started swirling around. First of all, Magnus Carlsen himself posted this very cryptic tweet saying, "I've withdrawn from the tournament. I've always enjoyed playing in the STL chess club and hope to be back in the future." And then he posted a clip that's been memed pretty constantly or consistently over the years of a famous, I believe, Portuguese football club manager by the name of Jose Mourinho, who was involved in some sort of cheating scandal, I believe. And he said something to the effect of, "If I speak, I'll be in big trouble." And that's what he posted. So the implication there, because of the association with this guy in this clip, is that he doesn't want to say what he knows, but his actions in leaving the tournament, really big deal. This guy doesn't do that. This guy, you know, he dominates. And then this guy Niemann responded in kind with a comment saying, "It must be embarrassing for the world champion to lose to an idiot like me. I feel bad for him." Oof. The self-deprecation part just doesn't, it comes off very disingenuous. Feels like a real troll. And this guy is kind of more of a product of like Gen Z kind of vibes. He is a really big Twitch streamer. He pretty regularly streams himself playing competitive online, you know, chess. So he's not like, you know, doing Call of Duty Twitch, but he is a Twitch streamer and has kind of a person, you know, an online presence and online personality. And I think there's maybe a sense that he wasn't to be taken seriously as a contender because of this kind of streaming type behavior. It just didn't seem like, I think if there's a sort of like a nose in the air kind of attitude. So he does that. Then this other guy, a guy by the name of Emil Satovsky, the director general of the International Chess Federation, he came to the to have Magnus's back, and he said this. He said, "No matter how this tournament went, Magnus Carlsen never quit. He must have had a compelling reason, or at least he believes he has it. Don't call him a sore loser or disrespectful. I shall not speculate on the reasons of his withdrawal, but probably would expect TD to air them." I'm not sure what TD is in this context, unless I'm being a bonehead here. So it goes further than this. The internet kind of starts going nuts. The chess world starts going nuts. All the speculation, because it's pretty difficult to prove cheating in competitive chess. And it's also just about as rare for it to even, you know, pop up. How do you cheat at chess? You're asking yourself, maybe, I think. Possibly. There are a couple of ways in a competitive game like this, in the same way a coach might have mapped out a series of plays, you know, in a American football game. They do that, you know, with images, with like graphics, like on a whiteboard, or they could even be like in some sort of like binder. Same thing is true with chess. You know, a lot of times there's these certain the Queen's Gambit, the name of that show, is named after a very specific type of play. That can be risky, I believe. It puts the queen at risk to some degree. But again, I'm no chess master by any stretch of the imagination. But there are all kinds of plays like this. Some of them are very famous. Some of them have, you know, they're a little bit more personalized to the individual player. But you could conceivably, you know, like getting the answers to the test in advance. Somebody could have, you know, done a Watergate and got somebody's play sheet. And then you kind of know in advance every move they're going to make before they make it. So that's one possibility, probably the most plausible, because the other one is pretty bizarre. There's this Vice article that outlines all this stuff, by the way. It's on Motherboard by Carl Bode. The chess world is absolutely losing it over cheating allegations after massive upset. The other way is through a device of some kind. And there is one proof of concept that an anonymous maker has put out there that uses vibrations in some sort of like rumble pack kind of situation that goes in a player's shoes that are like wirelessly linked to one of these like microcomputers, Raspberry Pi Zeros, running an open source piece of software called Stockfish. It's a chess engine. That device would be hidden somewhere in the player's clothes. And in the write-up online about this device, the creator said something to the effect of he was looking to recruit a, quote, plausibly good chess player to use the shoes to win the world championship, and then was planning on making a more elaborate, updated version, because he says, this proof of concept only needed to fool my mates in a pub for the duration of two games. To win the world championships, we're going to have to get much more serious. And so that post has kind of started to be thrown in Neiman's face as potential for how he may have accomplished this. It just goes to show how much stock is in this dude Magnus, that immediately he's beaten, and there's only possible way that another player could have done this, especially a player that is lower ranked.
Yeah, fellow chess enthusiasts will assure you, Magnus is legit. He is tremendously talented. He is the best living player in the game today, and it's a very old game. Mm-hmm. But he could go to bat. There's actually a lot of debate about how he would perform against other masters of the game. So it's not quite the same as Michael Jordan having a bad day on the court. This is very different, and I'm glad that we're talking about this today.
Yeah, and then it kind of takes a bit of a. tawdry turn here, when some members of the internet chess community started speculating, well, how did he get this device? Because again, now they're already assuming that he has this device or something like it. There were RFID scanners leading into and out of the areas of play. There were, what do they call those things? Magnetometers, you know, like those metal detectors that you walk through. This guy passed through all of them. And it may have been that it wasn't until the loss that they put some of these measures out. I'm a little unclear on that. But again, the internet chess community has started to speculate that, well, where did he put the device? Could it possibly have been in his anus? Could it have been up his butt? In the form of, again, trigger warning for adult themes here for a second. The idea that a set of vibrating anal beads, which is a device used to, you know, stimulate the prostate, could have been retrofitted wirelessly to do the same thing that the thing in the shoe was doing, to vibrate with certain coded messages that would allow the wearer to communicate with that computer running the open source chess engine. And the king of the trolls, Elon Musk, kind of poured gasoline on this by tweeting about it. So now it's just kind of all out there, this idea that this guy Neiman had a cheating mechanism in his prison wallet, and that is how he defeated this undefeatable competitor. And, he has responded and saying that, you know, if all my detractors are kind of, you know, making my point for me, if they have proof, then come out with it. But yeah, it's just I really never expected the world of competitive chess to take such a scandalous turn.
I would say it's odd to me, looking at just Magnus's reaction of the statement that he made when he decided to pull out of the tournament. Because his opponent was 19, right? His opponent was the lowest ranked person in the tournament.
That's right.
He defeated the highest ranked person in the tournament, which is not generally something that's supposed to happen. But, you know, with probability, anything can happen. It could have been this kid's best game that he's ever played and Magnus's worst game he's ever played. It's something that could happen. It doesn't seem like I've seen any evidence that's been alleged by anybody that this is actually what happened and cheating was involved.
Agreed.
Is that true?
No, there hasn't been.
No.
There are some instances pointing to Neiman having cheated at online chess, because apparently cheating in online chess is a lot more common. In the same way, if you'll recall, you know, the documentary, King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. I think it was like Billy Mitchell, who was kind of the big bad, you know, the hot sauce king or whatever. And it turns out that he had manipulated his machine and the frame rate for his online submissions, which was part of the whole, like, you know, qualifying. And like part of it was like, you know, online. So it was almost like Scout's Honor kind of, honor system or whatever. So there are allegations against this guy for cheating at online chess. But again, that's a far cry from walking into a highly, you know, monitored, high stakes competition with some sort of device, you know, hidden on your person or in your person, I guess. There was another really good article on metro.co.uk that was even talking about, like, what's the future of this type of cheating. There's something called Smart Fabric. I think it's sort of like what, you know, what's his name? Lucius Fox in the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. That's kind of how he described the material used to make the bat cape or whatever, that it's like the smart fabric that can go rigid or go loose, depending on, you know, how current is pumped through it. There is this idea of, like, you know, more advanced versions of these cheating devices that use smart fabric where the clothing actually will vibrate against your skin. And it's something that would be undetectable.
You wouldn't be able to hear that, I guess.
I would think you would as well, especially if it's like, you know, in your butt and you're sitting on a chair and, you know, those it's like deathly quiet when you're, you know, these types of games, they're very, like, you know, tense. And I would think you'd be hearing like a boop, 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 you know.
Well, in the shoes, the prototype of the shoes, there has to be an input, right? Because how would the machine know what move it needs to calculate a move against, unless you input what move just occurred, like what your opponent's move was, right?
I wonder if it's a left shoe, right shoe thing. But yeah, I also don't understand. Are you using Morse code? Like, what? How are you, you know, communicating this stuff? You're absolutely right. There would have to be some input based on the previous move set that you would be able to communicate to the device, and then it would tell you what the best possible outcome would be, or the best possible, you know, move would be.
Because you just have to clinch in a certain way in order to give it inputs, I guess. That's very odd.
And I mentioned Elon Musk, you know, trolling this whole thing. He posted a augmented quote from the philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer that says, "Talent hits a target no one else can hit. Genius hits a target no one else can see because it's in your butt." But this whole idea of the anal bees literally just came from one dude on YouTube. And there's this whole, you know, lore surrounding it already, where people are like writing like fan fiction versions of this. Like, there's a whole, the real answer is actually elementary, from a Reddit user named XI Trio. Magnus cheats. He always had anal beads up his butt, maybe for the past 10 years. That's how he's been dominating the entire field. But this is them accusing Magnus of doing this. That's how he's been dominating the entire field of play. There was a slight dip during the time he played Caruana because he was so drunk he couldn't feel the vibrations well and ended up losing the game. His team decided to turn up the vibrations to max, and that's how Magnus survived the encounter. So obviously some tongue-in-cheek kind of, you know, attitude about this as well, but it is fascinating. And then, no, to answer your question, no real allegations. And I'm also trying to find specifics about this other dude and the online chess allegations of cheating, but, you know, a lot of this is just kind of hearsay and trash talk. Well, it's obviously one we can keep an eye on for further developments. Because, you know, should true proof arise, I want to know. I mean, this is fascinating. It's like, this is the stuff of, you know, casino heist movies. But, you know, chess. So we'll take a quick break and come back with one more piece of strange news.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety Archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials... cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned. This is an interesting development, and it's a little bit of a vindication that we teased at the top of the show. Now, longtime listeners, fellow conspiracy realists, you know that for a number of years, we have talked about dark money. We have talked about the ways in which the powers that be seek to manipulate things behind the scenes. And, you know, we're very conscious of the idea that the U.S. is a number one, top five agent of chaos in the world. You have certainly also heard our accusations and explorations of the ways in which Russia manipulates politics behind the scenes. And often we were very, I would say, or at least for my part, I was stating this as fact, even when the U.S. government did not officially acknowledge the activities of Russia. There's a strong argument to be made that doing so might have put them in a, you know, throwing stones, glass house situation. But before we get to this last story for this weekly Strange News segment, Matt, Noel, true, false, Russia manipulates other countries. What do you think?
True.
Nah, you gotta show me the proof, man.
All right.
Show me the dark money. Huh?
Yes. Fans of biblical lore will perhaps consider you a descendant of Thomas the Doubter there. So let us stick
to my middle name, dude.
Fingers in these wounds, you know? The U.S. State Department came out not too long ago and said something that surprised me. And we'll quiz each other later on which aspect of this is surprising. They said that since 2014, so about 8 years, over the course of 8 years, they said Russia has secretly, through a variety of shell companies and proxies, spent a little more than $300 million to influence politicians and other officials, not just in the U.S., which can be sort of, the U.S. can be kind of narcissistic and self-obsessed, not just in the U.S., but in more than a baker's dozen of countries, actually two dozen countries. And this statement came out from the Department of State. We're working live. What they did was pretty clever. It's a practice that you might find in the Confucius Institutes that are PRC, Chinese-backed things in the U.S. It's also something that you see the U.S. doing in Latin America. This money was supporting think tanks, which are wildly unregulated. So $300 million, Uncle Sam says that's a minimum. But what surprises you about that statement, if anything? Does anything surprise you guys?
That it's that little amount of money?
Ding, ding, ding. Me too, man.
I concur.
Me too. And until we had done some digging into political corruption and things like lobbying in a chapter of our upcoming book, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Oh, gosh, don't blackbag us. We did plug it, corporate overlords. until we had done that, I always imagined incorrectly that it took a great deal of financial grease to move the levers of power. $300 million doesn't seem like a lot if we're talking about, you know, 24 different countries. But this has been conclusively confirmed. The U.S. intelligence community now is saying $300 minimum. They don't have the flashlights to find all the dark corners of the money here. And right now, this is so sensitive that there aren't a ton of people going on record. In previous episodes, we had shouted out specific former individuals. We had shouted out things that are all but official leaks from the U.S. government. Quick tip, if you're ever wondering whether the U.S. has authorized a leak that they don't want to be responsible for, then you will hear it reported as a source close to the Pentagon in the New York Times and stuff like that. And it's 100% everybody in the government saying, yeah, no, it's fine to tell them, just like make sure you don't get car bombed.
I also like the one that's like someone familiar with the Ooh. Situation. That's also good.
Yeah, yeah, that's a classic too. And you can't argue with the golden oldies. I want to draw special attention for anybody who wants to read this to a New York Times article by a guy named Edward Wong. Russia secretly gave $300 million to political parties and officials worldwide. So these streams of money are very hard to trace, but they're very powerful. And when we think of $300 million, which is absolutely a life-changing amount of money to the vast majority of the population, when we think of that in terms of moving the world to better align with your vision, it does seem like a bargain. But we have to consider that that money moves in creative ways, and you would be surprised by how low a price people will sell themselves for if they don't see the bigger picture. A lot of the folks who are getting bought or influenced have no idea what the overall budget is, right? Like if you pay somebody $20 to do something, you don't want them to know that you have another $500 if you really need them to do it. This is stuff like, for instance, this is happening in Ecuador. It has happened in Ecuador. It's happened in a couple of African countries in very sensitive regions. It's, of course, happening in Eastern Europe, right? Shout out Belarus. But when you see the way it works, it's important to realize that a lot of this isn't getting reported. The U.S. has been doing many similar things, as has China, the other superpower. But just to walk it through, it's washing money, false contracts, shell companies, little bit of lobbying, have the ambassador give a gift to another ambassador, right? Or have them donate to a presidential campaign. And I hope that's not too close for a lot of us listening in the United States. Russia has relied on state-owned enterprises and large firms that are ostensibly quasi-governmental or ostensibly private to move across Central America, the Middle East, and of course, Europe. And when you have a think tank, you know, you can be in the catbird seat. You can be someone who whispers power and powerful thoughts to the throne.
Is that like when a cat goes?
Yeah, the
is
chirping.
It the catbird seat?
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. The catbird seat is maybe an anachronistic phrase, but if you understand that phrase, just write in or find us on social media. The issue here really is, as dumb as it might sound, I was trying to think of a current analogy. They're paying influencers the same way that companies go to Instagram and try to touch people, right? And their influence is not, you know, let me convince someone to buy, you know, this tummy flattener or this wrinkle eraser. It's let me convince someone to do what I, as Russia, want regarding fossil fuels, regarding democratic rights, regarding whether or not to sign a treaty. It gets pretty nasty pretty quick. And the U.S. government is now warning actively, not surreptitiously, which they've been doing for years, but they are actively warning the countries that they feel are under target for this campaign to expel Russian intelligence officers. But that's kind of an easier said than done sort of thing. Like finding the money, tracing the money is already really difficult. Finding the actual asset is also incredibly, I mean, it can be really difficult. You know what I mean? A lot of Russian intelligence doesn't outsource the way U.S. intelligence might. The CIA just got smacked for that, by the way. And they said, hey, maybe we should do a better job vetting the folks we essentially contract in all these countries.
Yeah, you could do that. That's probably a good idea.
But
Ben, this is elections as well as disinfo and the combination of the two, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Shadow of okay. Alexander Dugin. You've nailed it, Matt. The idea is Russia's intelligence apparatus and its, you know, its government, which is essentially Vladimir Putin and his entourage, are using some sideline methods to make changes that are not immediately apparent until there's a full aggregate effect. So all of a sudden, maybe, Latin America, the hegemonic backyard of the U.S., starts voting for better bilateral relationships with Moscow. I know this can sound a little bit boring, but I promise it is not boring when the wars go hot. And the Biden administration is apparently in a little bit of dissent right now. I mean, the U.S. politically is in domestic dissent because they're attempting to declassify more intelligence about the activities of Russia. And this is something to pay attention to. It's just for us and stuff they don't want you to know, it's a bit of a validation. And for a lot of our fellow listeners as well, because you have to ask yourself, a lot of historians are going to earn their PhDs in the future asking this question. Who knew what when, right? The same questions about 9/11 are going to be the same questions people ask about the current war in Ukraine, right? What did people know and not share? What indications existed? And was the were the regimes of secrecy that were instituted, were they helpful or were they ultimately harmful? So we anticipate more information about this is going to come out now. And yes, the world is unfair. I, for instance, can't get away with a late fee at the library, and people are out here moving the world for the low, low price of $300 million. So maybe it's an episode in the future. We'll need more information. But this is us walking you to the edge of the rabbit hole. Dive in. Give us your take. As a matter of fact, if you are pro-Russia, would also love to hear your perspective. Again, the U.S. is often in a glass house when it accuses other governments of doing shady stuff abroad. So that's all for today. Oh, as a matter of fact, you know what? One plug for our upcoming listener mail segment this week. We are giving you some inside info, or we are at least relaying some insider info that we're going to do our best to keep anonymous, but we can't wait for you to tune in. We try to be easy to find online.
Boy, do we ever. The easiest. You can find us all over the internet. We are at Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter and YouTube and the Facebook, where we have a group called Here's Where It Gets Crazy. On Instagram, we're at Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Yes, Noel. You can find us all over the place with mostly conspiracy stuff, as you said. You can also dial 1-833-STDWYTK to reach our voicemail system. When you call in, please give yourself a cool nickname. Doesn't matter what it is, the cooler, the sillier, the funnier, the better. And it's just that way we can remember who you are if you call in again. You've got 3 minutes when you do call. Use it however you'd like, really. But just make sure you let us know if we can use your name and voice on one of our listener mail episodes. If you've got more to say than can fit in 3 minutes, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buenas, buenas, mis amores. This is Vico Ortiz, host of Date My Abuelita First. Each week, myself, alongside our resident abuelita Liliana Montenegro,
esa soy yo,
play matchmaker for a group of hopeful romantics in this fun, flirty, and hilarious game show. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps. Listen to Date My Abuelita First on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.